This guy. My name is Merlin. I'm an alcoholic. That's funny. It's funny. Nobody, if you say, how many cokeheads are out here? Be like, yeah, yeah. How many crackheads are out here? Nobody wants to. So, all right. Y'all ain't ashamed, right? It just doesn't sound quite as good. Anyways, yeah, my name's Merlin. I'm an alcoholic. Johnny, y'all's chef, called me Wednesday and asked me to come out here. He said the other guy canceled, and I couldn't really say no. I said, hold on, let me think. He said, just say yes, dude. You know Johnny, the chef. I said, all right, shit. Don't hit me, dog. But, yeah, I didn't always. Most of my life, I identified myself not as an alcoholic. I identified myself by how much money I got, or what I look like, or what kind of car I drive, or how cute my chick is. You know, all that surface stuff, but not by who I really am. And really, I guess when I say I'm an alcoholic, that really tells you a whole lot about me, especially if you're an alcoholic, because that means you've probably felt the things I've felt and thought some of the crazy stuff I thought, maybe done some of the crazy stuff I did, and definitely drank like I drank, smoked crack like I smoked crack. You know, because there's more to it. You know, alcoholism, it's identified by, but not limited to drinking. It took me a long time to understand that. For most of my life, I thought, yeah, I drink too much. I'm an alcoholic, but there's other stuff to it. You know, I got this thing where I feel real separated from all of you and the general public. Kind of like most of my life, if I walked into a room like this, it's one big group of people. And as soon as I get here, it's two groups, right? It's all of y'all, and it's me. And all of y'all got like a glowing neon sign on your forehead. It says greater than, less than, or just not equal. I'm just different. Terminally unique, right? Is that what we say? Not like anybody else in the world. Except, you know, come to find out, we're all pretty much alike, right? I got some other characteristics that I really didn't identify until I got clean and started looking at it. You know, this thing where I tend to want to isolate. At the same time, I can't stand being alone. I think I'm the coolest thing in the room. And at the same time, I got low self-esteem. You know, alcoholism is a trip, man. I would come into these treatment centers over and over and over again, and it got to where the first step, I would read it off the wall, I'm powerlessness, unmanageability, and I would hear about this allergy and this mental obsession, and the allergy thing, you know, I'm a heroin addict, became real easy to understand. I got the powerlessness. When I'm strung out, I'm strung out. I gotta stay on it. But I would tend to think that I could possibly, when I'm out there running and gunning, I would think, well, if I could just get somewhere for like 2 weeks and get unstrung out, I'd be all right. And I would come into these places and I would read the steps off the wall. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't get a sponsor or work the steps. And I wouldn't stay sober. I would blame that on the treatment centers. Be like, they didn't treat me right. Or, you know, you wait, you get here, you're like, are they going to knock on my door and treat me or what? But, you know, it's up to us. Or they do those little things like write what you want to let go of on this helium balloon. And I'll write anger, resentment, addiction, and let it go. And you know what happened? Nothing. And or write a goodbye letter to your drugs, and the day I get out, I'm doing the drug, and I would say, well, I was thinking that's how they treat addiction. I didn't listen to all the other stuff they were telling me. And I would always get out and get high again, and it would go like one of three ways. Either I would be, you know, I thought unmanageability meant, you know, my life's unmanageable because I got a wallet full of pawn tickets and no money, or my bumper's falling off the car and I won't fix it, and all my traffic tickets turn to warrants, people won't let me in their house, court cases, all that unmanageable stuff. So I would look at the steps, but not work them. I'd say, yeah, my life's unmanageable. So I got the dope out of my system. Now I'll take care of all these unmanageable stuff. Get right with my probation officer and my mom, my girl, get my kids back from CPS. All these things that I thought was supposed to fix me. And then I still wasn't okay, right? I never would take care of what's in here. Because I didn't listen to everything that I was told. You know, letting that balloon go is just making a decision to do something about it, right? I still got to take some actions. So what would happen to me, like, I would get out of the treatment centers with every, you know, really wanting to stay sober. but some time would go by, and I would look like I'm doing good. I start getting my stuff back. Things look okay on the outside. But I still don't feel right. I start feeling real uncomfortable. That separation, I'm just not quite okay. Maybe I'm just not enough for some reason, right? And people would say, you got a car and a job. You got your wife, your kids. You're doing good. You look good. Be like, man, you can't see how I feel. And it starts to hurt so bad, I get so uncomfortable, I feel like I've been punched in the stomach. Kind of like, feels physical. You know, anybody, if you ever get like broke up with by somebody you love, and that shit hurts all the time. It's in the front of your mind or in the back of your mind, but it's always there. And eventually it gets like so bad that I can't handle it anymore. I can't feel like this. Alcoholism is an illness I know now that demands relief of one way or another, right? And I know that alcohol treats alcoholism. So I drink again. Because when I feel like that, it doesn't matter what the consequence is. Like, I'm going to roll the dice and hope that it doesn't turn out as bad as it was last time. Right? That and the other thing that happens, like, I get out of the treatment center and I think after a little while, like, man, I was being a little bit harsh. I could drink on the weekends, but so I say I changed my mind. But is that me changing my mind, or is it, you know, alcoholism centers in the mind? Maybe something else is making that decision for me. Something that for most of my life was a little bit stronger than me. Cause you know we ain't that badass really. If you think about it, all y'all got licked by a fucking beverage. Or a baggie of substance that fits in something like this dusted your ass. It did me. Or crack rock. That or I'll get out of the treatment center and I won't be thinking about it at all. Things will start going okay and I start getting my life back and start rebuilding. And I run into the wrong person at the wrong time. Or the right person at the right time, however you want to look at it. And they say, want to get high? And mental blank spot, right? Yeah, sounds like a good idea. And then I'm off on the zone again. But enough about the first step since I'm... How long do I got for? Cool. So I'll tell y'all a little bit about my life, what I had going on. I'm born and raised in Austin. I grew up in South Austin, Old Torf and Congress, kind of behind that Gardner Betts Juvenile Detention Center. My home away from home, yeah. It was convenient for my mom. She could just around the corner, hey, go to court. I was kind of a deviant. But my dad was an alcoholic. My mom was it was not uncommon in my house for, you know, a roach to always be in the ashtray. My whole family's pot smokers. My brother, he dabbled a little. I had a brother that was 3 years older than me. But my dad, like, I remember he moved out when I was two. My mom said he embarrassed her for the last time. And my stepdad moved in. He was an alcoholic, too. More of a pothead. It was just kind of normal growing up in my house. I just thought, you know, weed, that's what you do. And my dad started smoking with me when I was about 11, let me drink beer. I thought that was cool. I think I still sometimes wonder about those people that, you ever meet people that are like 25 years old? No, I never smoked that stuff. Like, what are you, a fucking alien? Like, they don't got weed on your planet or what? Why? You know? But so, forgive me for cussing. I got a foul mouth. I'll try not to say anything too vulgar. But, yeah, so by the time I was like 15, yo, what up? I got high every day, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I drank a lot, too, and I sold a lot of acid. You know, I like to do a lot of drugs, and I realized real quick that my lunch money wasn't going to quite cover it. So I had to get into the business of dealing. And it caused a lot of problems. And, you know, like I said, I would go to the juvie hall, I'd get busted with guns and drugs and stuff. And when I was 15, I had been in these, like, teen and family counseling centers. They'd counsel the family. They would tell my mom, like, they would tell us all, my dad too. I didn't know at the time, my stepdad, he was kind of shooting dope behind my mom's back. And they said, well, if y'all want the family to heal, y'all got to stop. And my mom, she just kind of stopped. I thought, that's weird, you know? That's the thing, user and a drug addict. You got like a, you tell a drug user that their drug using is hurting their family, and they just stop. But, you know, for me, you tell me it's hurting my family, then I might have to lose a family. You know what I mean? Same thing with jobs. That's kind of how I knew my dad, my real dad. He was an alcoholic. He was a teacher at Hayes High School, and he quit, drove a cab the last 20 years of his life because he could drink during the day. And same thing, like, tell a drug user that it's affecting their job negatively, they quit using drugs. And you tell me, I quit my job because my priorities are straight. I need to get high. But so my mom got an Al-Anon, kicked me out, and kicked my dad out, my stepdad. And he did this amazing thing and went to Bolden and got sober. Me, I wasn't trying to do that. You know, nobody in this world could have told me I was doing anything wrong. It was just exciting, having a good time. So I have to give a shout out to Alcoholics Anonymous for that, because my dad, he died about 6-7 years ago, but he was sober 22 years. And so I do that when I'm nervous, all y'all looking at me and shit. And he was forever a very different person. AA, long before I thought about becoming a member, gave him my dad back, or really gave me a dad for the first time. He was the one person through all my years I could call and tell him anything. And he didn't judge me. He always said, man, I know exactly what you're going through. And he never pushed AA on me. He said it wouldn't have did any good. And he was right. Wouldn't have did any good. When I was 16, I was at school one day. They came and pulled me out early. My real dad, he told me my brother had just died from alcohol poison. And I was fucking destroyed, right? And maybe that day or the next day I got drunk. And when I woke up, I had forgot everything from the night before. And that's when I realized, and the bottle has the power to make me forget. And all I wanted was to forget right then, and for a long time. And so I drank every day, a lot. I did a lot of other stuff. I loved to snort a lot of coke. Some of y'all remember Rohypnol was popular back then. Yeah, you know. They call it a date rape drug, but I wasn't sharing that shit. I was, sometimes I don't know if I got date rape. I'd wake up butt-ass naked on the floor. What happened? But I took those every day and drank a lot and did a lot of drugs. And I got in a whole lot of trouble that year. I got kicked out of high school. So I went to the Alternative Learning Center, the bad kid school. I got, some of y'all been there. And I got kicked out of there. My mom still kind of had hope. She put me in a private school, but I lasted about a month and got kicked out, all for dealing drugs and drug-related shit. And maybe 5 days after I turned 17, maybe 3 days, I got arrested and went to the adult boy jail just for some weed. But it was that whole year was a blur for me. So I got arrested about a week after that for a PI and then a minor in possession of alcohol, and then I got a DWI. I just kept, I didn't think things through, like, that I had to go back to court. I just paid the bond and got out. And then I got my first felony. Maybe I was 17, like 3 months. I crashed my car into a house. I had a couple pounds of weed in it and one of those big triple beam scales that some of y'all probably stole those from the science class like we did. Like some of you youngsters never seen what's a triple beam? But and I bonded out on that too, and maybe like a month or two after that I was getting tattoos with my friends, and I tattooed Merlin, everybody right here, because I'm gangster and shit. And on the way home, I didn't have a shirt on. And I jumped out and I knocked this dude off his bicycle. It was a nice bike, in my defense. And I threw it in the hatchback of my friend's Camaro. If I could give you any tips, if you got a name like Merlin, don't tattoo it across your chest and then rob somebody. So eventually all that started catching up with me. I didn't realize it carried 2 to 20. I was like, it's a freaking bicycle. But, because I smacked the dude. But I got locked up for that. And I did a couple of years. And when I got out, I went to AA. They said, go to AA. I said, okay. And I went kind of a lot because it was required. My dad had inspired me a little bit, but I just wasn't there. I was still comparing myself. I still felt real separated. I thought I was too smart for these fools. Like, they got all these DWIs and go to prison over and over and divorces and this and all those yets. That hadn't happened to me yet. All the yets became again and again later. But so when the AA people started talking about go on to the bitter end and die an alcoholic death or accept spiritual help, I was like, man, fuck this. Y'all forgot about option number 3, like party on the weekends. And unfortunately, if you're a real alcoholic, that option might not be available for you. And it wasn't for me. And alcoholism is progressive, right? So I had to drink a whole lot more and a lot more often to get where I needed to be. And I added a lot more substances to the mix. That was definitely progressive. How it's drug addicts like to judge other drug addicts too. I used to snort an awful lot of coke. Since he brought up the crack thing, I snorted an awful lot of coke, but I would look and be like, at least I don't smoke crack like them crackheads. We're all, those guys are out of there. But when my nose is bleeding real bad or I'm stuffed up, my friend's like, I know how to rock it up. Well, I do need to keep getting high. Go ahead and rock that shit up, right? So then I'm a crackhead. And then I'll say, well, got to judge somebody. At least we ain't like over there rolling one of their meth pipes and tweakers. Them people are out of there. They stay up for weeks and shit. But then when I can't find no coke, I don't know about you, but I'm not going to just not get high. All right, I'll take the meth. So I'm a meth head. You know, and then I'll say, well, at least we ain't all knotted out like them junkies on heroin. Those guys are fucking losers. We're silly like that, huh? And then I, you know, sure enough, though, I shot up heroin for 10 years. Yeah, one so funny while it was happening. But, so during that time, you know, that's you know, progression with drugs. There's some other progressive features of alcoholism, like how much I'd get locked up, you know, how far away they'd send me, how long they'd keep me. That was definitely progressive. My son, I got married and had a kid. My son was 3. I went to prison, and, you know, I swore I wouldn't go back. Like, man, I'm done with this. And I wrote everybody letters. I'm going to do good. And, you know, people believe you because, you know, you're telling the truth. I was telling the truth. My dad, he used to be an English teacher. He would just take a red pen and, like, correct all my letters, add in, and send them back. I thought that was a trip. So I got out. Maybe I lasted a couple weeks, and then, you know, I changed my mind. Or maybe alcoholism centers in the mind, right? And it didn't work out with that child's mother. But I kept my son. And I had another baby maybe a year after, actually like 10 months after me and her split up. I didn't do it on purpose, but I got a pretty daughter. She's almost 7 now. And when she was 8 months old, I got locked up again. I thought, damn, man, how do I keep doing this? You know, and I got locked up a lot in between. You know, I had the 2 and the second and the third DWI and a bunch of other shit. If I was to just sit and talk about my arrest record, we'd be here the whole time. The last time I went to prison, I got caught with 6 ounces of heroin. And I just say it because people tell all these cool stories, and then they say they went to prison, and they don't say why. And when I'm driving home, I'm always asking my chick, like, I wonder what that dude went to prison for. He should have told us, man. But so I did the same thing. I wrote all these letters, and everyone thought I was going to do good, even me. And my mom picked me up in Huntsville and drove me back to Austin, same little house I grew up in. And I stepped out of the car, and my mom's neighbor was there, and he was smoking a cigarette. He said, hey, Merlin, how you doing? Where you been? Want to get high? And bam, it was that quick. I had no mental defense against the first drink. And my life started traveling downhill really fast. You know, something else progressive with alcoholism for most people, I think, is how much we hurt people and how often we hurt them, especially the people we love the most, right? We hurt them the worst. And my girl, my daughter's mom, she used to kick me out of the house all the time. And I went to my mom's house, and I remember falling out on the floor with my syringes laying around and banging my head and just being out. And the next day she says, you know how it makes me feel? I got to take your pulse. My mom's a nurse. See if you're still alive. I already had one son die from this shit. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, right? That's one line in the big book. When you read it the first time, you really don't have to study to know what that means. Like, oh, I get that shit. Fucking demoralized, all right. But, so the next time my girl kicked me out, I pulled up like 2 houses down and got high in the car. So I passed out there instead, and I woke up with all kind of guns and flashlights in my face. Luckily, it was kind of small, like, you know, misdemeanor amount of heroin and meth. There's such a thing. But my parole officer, she came to see me. She said, I'm not going to lock you up for being a junkie in your car. I thought, that's fucking awfully nice of you. But I got out, you know, and I got high again, of course, because that's what I do. And I kept getting high. And life was going real downhill real fast. You know, my son, I sent him to live with his grandma on his mom's side because, you know, he missed like 45 days of school with me, you know, up to that point. And my daughter, she was probably two or three then, CPS, it took her away. My daughter's mom, she was a smoker, but she was one of those ones judging me all the time. You fucking junkie, get the fuck out of here with your needle. Always kicking me out while she smoked the pipe. Old judgmental ass dope fiends. You know what's progressive that really got me, man, is the pain, right? I started to hurt real bad, like depressed. And when I would hurt so bad and like maxed out, like a number 100 on pain, it can't get any worse. And I'd wake up the next day and like I reached this whole new level of hurt that nobody could possibly know exists. It's just so bad. And I still couldn't stop no matter what. And I would go in and see my parole officer. You know, CPS was going to take my kids away. Told me I'd have to sign rights away if I didn't get sober. My parole officer, they always ask you, have you done any drugs or alcohol since you last came in here? And, I mean, look at me, dude. Are you kidding? So maybe the last time I seen him like three times like that, he said, bro, I'm going to have to lock you up. You keep saying you're going to go to rehab, but you won't do it. That was a Thursday. I was like, fuck, he's going to lock me up. I called the rehab. I said, hey, I really got to hurry. They said we've been waiting on you. That was a Thursday. They said, you want to come in tomorrow? I said, whoa, hold on. I'm in a hurry, but damn. They said, how about Monday? I said, how about Tuesday? You know, I know it's been real bad for the last 10 years, but I'm going to ride this shit out one more weekend and see if maybe it gets better, right? Shit didn't get better. So when I came into rehab, I was looking at things real differently. Like I said, I was defeated completely by a fucking substance in a bag this big. And that was a tough pill to swallow. But I started reading that little blue book they got there, and it made perfect sense to me. It was like it was written just for me. You know, maybe not some stuff after you get into it a ways was still kind of confusing, but all those first pages talking about alcoholism was absolutely me. There was no denying it. You know, I was real fortunate, man. Anyways. So I listened to everything these people said, and when these AA guys came into the treatment center I was at, like, I paid real close attention to them because they looked like derelicts, you know? And they were all happy, enthusiastic about life. And I'd been hopeless for a long time. There was no way I could get sober. And so when I saw those people, I got like a little inkling of hope. We got to jump in this thing full force, it says, right? I have no choice but to grab this simple kit of spiritual tools, whatever that means. Somebody please show me, right? So when I left the treatment center, I was one of those dudes that went to a whole shit ton of meetings because I didn't know what else to do. I was like, man, I'm really desperate, dude. The CPS cases, the prison, the jail, all that shit I can handle. I've been through that again and again. But that pain and how bad it hurt, and I don't know what thing it was that caused the hurting. I don't know if it was just my life going downhill, you know, way faster than I could mentally adjust to it. You know, like I can be like, oh, if I don't have a good job, fuck it, that's cool. Or, oh, if I got to give my kids up for a while, it's okay. But it was everything. You know, I can adjust slowly, but I went downhill fast every time. So I got a sponsor right away. And I always went, he went to the same two meetings every week, so I always showed up where he was at. Say, hey, what should I do next? You know, I went through the steps real fast, but I got connected to the people of AA, one, by going to a whole lot of meetings, and two, like, every time somebody would get a 30-day chip or a 60-day chip or any chip, my sponsor would say, go shake that dude's hand, say hi. You know, this uncomfortable things that I was thinking, like, I don't fucking know that dude. Like, but I do it anyways, right? Follow instructions. Hey, fucking dude, thank you, you did good. I started like, that is kind of funny, huh? I started getting connected to people like that, right? I started feeling a part of something. It was a little bit uncomfortable at first. That's one of the things I really love about the Austin Recovery alumni thing is none of us have to get out of here and walk into an AA meeting all alone and uncomfortable. We got each other. We get to come back here on Sundays, and we get to come back here on Thursdays, and we get to team up. Say, bro, what meetings you going to? And we can show up knowing somebody. You know, I went to a rehab out of town this time. And I showed up not really knowing people, but I was desperate. And my sponsor, I was about 2 months sober, he said, will you come to this rehab and tell your story? I was like, that's fucking not a good idea. What do you want me to do that for? But I did it, right? And it got me thinking, maybe I could possibly say something to help somebody else, right? Get out of self, right? That's what it's all about. I mean, one of the many things it's all about. And I had a lot of powerful experiences going through the step work. You know, we look at that fourth and fifth step stuff, and I know some people say, oh, I did my fifth step. I feel like I'm walking hand in hand with God. That wasn't my experience. I thought, yeah, I just like told people what a piece of shit I am. All I discovered was like that I really am responsible for where I got myself and pretty much everything that ever happened to me, at least very much mostly responsible. But the good thing about figuring that out is I always thought I was, you know, a victim. You know, if y'all had been dealt the hand I got dealt in life, you'd do what I did too, right? I've been victimized. So going through a fourth and fifth step and looking at, you know, I'm responsible here. It was kind of crappy because I was like, damn, I'm a fucking piece of shit. I'm responsible for this. But then that was also real good, right? Because that mean I wasn't no longer dependent on other people to act right so I could be okay. If I'm responsible, that means I can do something about it, right? And then that also means that after I clear up a lot of this mess and I run into future messes, I can say, well, damn, I must have something to do with this mess I got myself in. Maybe this, too, I can do something about. And one of the things that I had to look at, you know, I believe everybody in here has a real powerful experience waiting for them in the amends process. Just doing a fourth and fifth step, a lot of people think, I did my shit. You ain't did shit. You know, my mother-in-law, I was real pissed off at her. I had been victimized. She had come over to my girl's house, my daughter's mom, and kicked me out of the house and took my son's Xbox and threw it down in the horse stall and brought this paper with her and tried to make me sign my daughter's rights away. And I was pissed off at her, right? So I was going to do something about that shit. And so when I got out of rehab and went through the steps, I went to her and told her how sorry I was that I put her through having to worry about her granddaughter and her daughter and what that must have felt like. and what could I possibly do to make that better? And, you know, I do everything I can. I take real good care of my family now. And me and her got a real good relationship. And it's only through the steps that that's possible. There's also, you know, I did a lot of amends. I still do some here or there because I stole a lot of shit. And when I call my sponsor, you know, it seems like the answers to all my problems, they don't really lie in the problem, right? If I got a problem and I call my sponsor, say, bro, my chick's this and my job this, and I need to do something about it. Okay. Well, so where are you at on your amends list? I don't think you're listening to me. I'm talking about my chick's pissing me off and this job ain't going right. Yeah, so let's look at that next amends on your list. And why is it that works? You know, it's hard to understand sometimes, right? It seems like the more I live with integrity, right? The more I live a good, positive life, I'm not going to say that I understand God and God's universe, right? But God's universe doesn't seem to be out to get me so much no more. You know what I mean? Things seem to fall into place a lot more. And some other powerful experiences I've had, you know, with my mom, I was super pissed off at her. I was like, you fucking kicked me out of the house when I was 15. And, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But looking through that in the fourth and fifth step, I come out on the other side of that. And I was real pissed off at her for bringing my stepdad into the house. He used to beat the shit out of me. But if I got to look at things from a new perspective, right, so that I'm okay with it. In reality, I was really, really, really pissed off at my mom for bringing the one person into my life. You know, he got sober when I was 16 or 15. That understood me through all these years. And thank God he was there because, you know, I was closer to him than to my mom for a long time. And looking at it that way, like, damn, I was really, really pissed at my mom for this shit for like 30 years. And it's quite possible that my mom was doing the best she could given the hand she'd been dealt and really did actually a really good job. Financially supported us, put herself through school. She kicked me out, but, you know, I had a little drugstore going out the bedroom window. She didn't know what else to do with me. I was a freaking deviant. So I come out on the other side of that, owing my mom a huge amends. And most of the people, I don't have time to get into them all, or I would, that I was really pissed off at, when I looked and found the truth, which is really what a lot of this is about, is just finding the truth, man. The truth is that people don't owe me shit. People didn't do nothing to me. And this whole life thing, right? My perspective has been changed. And reading the book, this one of the lines that I didn't quite get when I got sober and I read through the big book, as ex-problem drinkers, our very lives depend on the constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. That shit don't sound good. My life depends on constantly thinking about others. I'm fucked. But the longer I stay sober and the more I put into helping others, the more I see is that one of those things that gets God attracted to my life for some reason? Apparently it is, right? And so I can tell you, like, what transpires in life all day long. You know, my son lives with me. He's in early college high school. He's 14. He's super smart. My daughter lives with me. She's a little derelict. I might start saving up a rehab fund. Because, like, college fund, rehab fund. And, but they're there, right? And my family's together, and that's something, you know, I got cars, and I pay insurance, and all that good shit. I've kept the same job since I Actually, I probably still have a hard time keeping a job. I'm self-employed, so I don't have to deal with somebody telling me what to do. But somehow it pays all the bills, right? And there's all that good stuff. Health, not having to worry. You know, I'm off parole and probation. And like my parole and probation officers, I was on both. Yeah, you can do that, both. They were like super nice and letting me off early. Like, you're such a good guy. This guy. But all that's tangible, you know, a lot of it's easy to see. I have this truck that I used to wreck a lot. I finally put a new bumper on it. I decided that the not getting in wrecks thing might stick. I haven't been in one since I got sober. So I waited till I was like 2.5 years sober to stick a bumper on that thing. But the thing, you know, when I got sober, all I really wanted was to just be okay, right? Because my whole life, I haven't been okay. I haven't been okay just sitting there. I can't sit there alone. I can't sit there in a room full of people. I just can't be. And there's nothing nobody could say or do to make me be okay. And that's all I wanted, was to feel like I was enough and I didn't have to add some sort of substance to the mix so that I could survive, right? Because I absolutely needed to get high. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me so much more than that. Like, I really couldn't put it into words, you know? That, like, that inner peace, that little tingle I get when I look at my kids sleeping in their bed. You know, that my mom's friend called me the other day and was talking to me. So, yeah, I asked your mom how you're doing. She says, Merlin's doing awesome. He's always fucking awesome. That kind of shit feels good, because before I got sober, my mom would just say, when are you going to stop being such a fucking loser? And she said it with infliction, fucking loser. You know, change the locks out, no keys, don't come to my house. So those are the things that I can't really put into words, man. I can say that my money can't buy a softer pillow than my old one has gotten. The moments that we have in sobriety, seeing the light come on in other people's eyes, getting to be a part of this community, that's, money can't buy that shit, you know? Whenever I'm talking, I'll say when other people are talking, actually. Sometimes they say a whole lot of real cool stuff, but then, like, the clock starts going, like, past the time they're supposed to talk. And I think, man, fuck everything that dude just said. So, since it's 8:20 now, and I'm not perfect in recovery, I've done one thing right, and I've kept a grateful heart all the time. And thank y'all for being my friends tonight.